Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Shades of Entrepreneurship. This is your host, Mr. Gabriel Flores. Today's episode welcomes an entrepreneur who generally believes one person's trash is another person's treasure by turning recyclable items into a profitable business, which got me thinking about recycling. What is recycling? Why is it important? And why should an entrepreneur care? And yes, I'm talking about that type of recycling. The process of collecting and processing materials that would otherwise be thrown away as trash and turning them into products. For those listening that did not grow in the United States, the slogan may be new. Growing up in the U.S., many kids heard this three-word slogan, reuse, reduce, and recycle. It is debatable exactly when the slogan was created, but the origins are often traced back to the first National Earth Day on April 22, 1970, which is the exact same year the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, was formed. The goal was to reduce overall waste footprint. Reuse versus discarding items and recycle items to turn them back into raw materials that we used again to manufacture new products or items. Why is this important? It protects our ecosystem and wildlife by lessening the disruption of the natural world, such as cutting down fewer trees. It is the conservation of natural resources. When we don't recycle plastic, it can take up a lot of solid waste and can take centuries to break down. Fun fact, most plastic comes from fossil fuel hydrocarbons. More recyclable metal means less extracted new metal, also reducing the need to harvest new materials. Additionally, using recycled materials requires less energy than making new raw materials. For example, recycling one glass bottle saves enough power to light a 100-watt light bulb for 4 hours, which in turn saves money. Many states in the U.S. will provide deposits back on certain aluminum items, mostly beverages such as soda, beer, and bottled water, to name a few. So again, for those folks that are listening outside the United States, which I'm very shocked to say there are many, the deposit return gives back the deposit amount spent on that can. In Oregon, the deposit is 10 cents per can. However, some grocery stores will even go further and will provide an additional 2 cents per bottle if instead of taking the cash, the depositor decides to take a credit at the local grocery store to purchase from that store again. Example, Fred Meyer's in Oregon will give depositors 12 cents per return instead of the typical 10 cents deposit if the depositor takes the return as a credit to purchase at a Fred Meyer's grocery store in the future. It is a phenomenal way to get the depositor to return to the store for a purchase. But the most important aspect is climate change, and that is why the entrepreneur should care. Let us remove the blinders that we have slid over our eyes for the past few years from various news stations, commenters, social media sites, memes, or what have you. Do not listen to anyone. Do not even listen to me right now. But look around. What is happening in our world? Remember, we are part of a global economy. What is happening to our globe is important to understand as it will affect anything an entrepreneur touches. Speaking from experience, I would prefer not to spend my time worrying about family during one of the worst fires our state has ever seen, and then only months later that fearsome worry changed to the worst ice storm our state has ever seen. As I constantly state throughout this podcast, the first step of being an entrepreneur is identifying the problem. The richest man in the world is making electric cars. Look at climate change as a business opportunity like Fred Meyer's grocery store is doing. Who can create carbon negative furniture? Who can tap into the untapped solutions hidden to the tropical forests? Who can create something that is just as efficient, if not more efficient, that has a lesser impact on our climate? We are a globe of community entrepreneurs. This world and everything that is in it was built from an entrepreneur. And I, for one, cannot wait to see what the global community of entrepreneurs creates next, together. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Shades of Entrepreneurship, where we interview entrepreneurs to inspire the future entrepreneur. I'll be your host, Mr. Gabriel Flores. So grab a drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. My next guest the company featuring 100% rescued and reused home decor. From making kids feel one-of-a-kind on Sesame Street to making one-of-a-kind art, please welcome the owner of Bunny Milkshake Concoctions, Vanessa Gillis.
This episode is sponsored in part by Burnside Knives, essential tools for outdoor enthusiasts and working professionals like yourself. Visit burnsideknives.com. Your knife says a lot about you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Shades of Entrepreneurship. This is your host, Mr. Gabriel Flores. Today, I am here with the owner of Bunny Milkshake. Very unique name. Do you guys actually make milkshakes?
Well, I do sort of make little tabletop milkshakes.
Okay, Vanessa Gillis, let's get into this. Really, really cool what you're doing. I've been checking out your website. But first, before we kind of get into the Bunny Milkshake, let's introduce the world to Vanessa. Who is Vanessa?
Oh, man. Well, I'm a mom. I'm a East Coaster living in Portland. I've been here for 10 years, but still an East Coaster. I don't know. You know, I went to school in the East Coast. I grew up there. I went to RISD. I lived in New York for 10 years, and now I'm a mom in Portland making recycled, upcycled art.
But you didn't start making. Let's talk about what'd you do before you did the recycling art?
Like right out of school?
Yeah.
My first job actually out of school was at the Christmas Windows in New York. I was doing the posing of the animatronic people. And then I had interned before that, though, actually at Sesame, at Muppets, the Muppet Workshop on Bear in the Big Blue House. I was like doing all the little cutting of the fur and all that stuff. And then I went to Sesame Street. I mean, I freelanced kind of all over the place. So I did Sesame Street and Bear in the Big Blue House and Blue's Room. And the longest stint I had was at Avenue Q. So it was all this kind of puppets. I went from like props and costumes to puppets to kind of like a mishmash of all of that. And then, I was at Avenue Q for a really long time. And then I decided I was just like over puppets, like so bored. So I went on to textiles for like this little blip, like right when the... right when everyone was getting laid off, so it was like 2008. So I would kind of get hired and then laid off and then hired, then laid off. And then I went back to puppets for like my last year. And I worked at Puppet Heap, which is in New Jersey, which was kind of where the Muppets went. Because the Muppets, when I joined, was like getting all split into pieces. It was getting sold. Like Disney had some, Children's Television Workshop. It was just kind of all over the place. So a lot of the core people kind of made their own businesses. So I ended up at one of those working for Sesame Street and the Muppets kind of... right before I moved here.
So what exactly were you doing with puppets? Were you at the hand, or were you actually creating the puppet?
I'm not a performer. I definitely am a behind the scenes girl. I do not like to be in front of the camera. It's not my favorite. So I make puppets, the costumes for puppets, the props for puppets. I mean, it's funny because I went to school and I graduated in 2001 for industrial design. And so we were like one of the last classes that was still doing it more by hand. Like the class below us had those shiny colored Mac and we didn't have those. Like we were literally the last class. So everything was like, you know, if you're doing, we didn't have 3D printers. So if you were going to make something for a project, you would sculpt it and it was supposed to look real. So that kind of led naturally into this kind of props thing. And then that kind of led into the puppet thing. And then, so I basically, when I used to freelance, because I freelance, my shtick was I could make anything. And if I can't make it, I know someone who can make that. You know, I can always get anything done. That was always my thing. So, but I'd say fabric and kind of, I don't know. I figured out my scale is like kind of, you know, puppet sized, you know, nothing too big. Cause I started off in apparel design in school and it was just the wrong scale and the wrong industry. And I think a lot of it's just like figuring out what scale you want to work at.
Now for the listeners, when you're saying scale, kind of describe that.
It's like how big. It's like some people like to work miniatures, right? Like I came here and worked at Leica for a bit and that's miniatures and the teeniest things. And that's like emotionally like too small for me. And then people size things when I had to do costumes for real people, it was like, that's too big. So it's like, you know, it's like three bears. And so kind of this middle ground, like, you know, 2 to 3 feet is the zone I want to be working in for basically everything. You know, it's when things get too small, it just stresses me out. So.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Just me, maybe.
I like it. Now, so let's give the folks at home a little bit of understanding. What is Bunny Milkshake and what does it do?
Well, I make home decor and party things and basically whatever I think of, and I make it only out of reuse. So it's like whatever I find, and I've stopped caring about what it is, so I can put anything I want on whatever I want. Before, I was kind of worried about things not being like classy enough or is this nice enough, and I'm like, no, if a ping pong ball like fits there, like put the ping pong ball like right there. So it's like wreaths and garlands and centerpieces and party favors and ornaments and who knows? Like, I never quite know. I started making chandeliers that don't light up, which then I was like, is that a chandelier if it doesn't light up? I'm not sure. But yeah, just whatever. But things to decorate your house, one of a kind, that's strictly just reuse, like nothing new.
And did I also see earrings?
Did you see earrings?
I don't know. I can't remember.
I think so. Although people have wanted to make earrings out of my ornaments. So that's been on the list, maybe. But no, not recently. I mean, maybe back in the day I did. I feel like I've made so many things, but.
Now, how did your experience, you know, working with the Muppeteers and Sesame Street and all those other things kind of help kind of get you to this moment?
Well, because you use like every kind of material, and it's the same kind of thing where it's like, you don't know, you don't care what it's made out of. Like, you know, those things made out of, the puppets made completely out of a hat someone had, you know, like, and then they remake that puppet and they have to remake the hat. Like, it's, you just make things like gluing and sewing and how are you going to attach this metal bit to this fabric bit? Like, it's going to have to be a different way than last time because it has to move. I mean, my thing was always, everything had to be durable. Like, it had to be usable. It had to hold up and it couldn't fall apart. So that's always kind of like how to make it strong and then also attach weird things to each other.
So. I love it. Yeah. Now, why did you decide to kind of pivot out of, you know, going through that kind of structure, that job, to being an independent entrepreneur?
Well, it's the kids. You know, I've got two kids and there's a limited time. So I'm the stay-at-home person. And so, you know, I was dealing with like, one kid at home and then one kid's at school for 3 hours. Like, you know, you just have these little bits of time. And so, I mean, it all feels like kind of like it just sort of happened. You know, it started with a little crafting project. And then, you know, I applied to the garden home rec sale because I was like, I don't know, like I have all these bits. Maybe I can make something. And then they let me in and I had like 3 weeks to make stuff. And I was like, that booth was very confusing for all people. But like, they're like, is this for sale? I'm like, I don't know. Like, this maybe, I don't know. But
are you going to offer me something for it?
Yeah, kind of. Like, just total chaos. But it's a timing. And then being stuck at home with the pandemic was like, what else can I do? And I'm the type that will go insane if I don't work. So it's like, it's not really an option for me to just, you know, so my house is a mess, but, you know, I'm working. So
how did the business end up? Did it start during the pandemic?
No, it started a little before that. Like I think it was two Christmases before the pandemic was the one that I got into the garden home. And then I kind of built it slowly. You know, I'm like a thrift shopper. I love to gather, you know, you have the bins here, yeah. The Goodwill outlet, which is like kind of the cause of all this, I think, because I would go there and I would see all these magical bits of things that had no more purpose and nobody wanted anymore. But they weren't going to go anywhere. Like just even empty wreaths, which is what I'd picked up the first time, but like a pile of empty wreaths. And I was like, oh, we'll craft with the kids. And, but to me, it's just like tragic. So I started to gather up like the most special weird things I would find. And, but I don't know how I got off on this tangent, but.
Goodwill. We're talking about Goodwill.
Yeah, we got to the
Goodwill.
The Goodwill bins, right. Which is its own world in itself. But that was kind of how it started. And so I had access to all this, and you don't have access to stuff like that in New York. Like you don't have access to cheap things. You don't have access to cheap supplies. There's no way I could have done this in the city, with the space required and it wouldn't have happened. Cause here there's like, I used to say that Portland is where, like everything I've ever owned came to die. because I like showed up here and in every thrift store, like everything I've ever owned is here. Like every doll I've ever had is in like a vintage store in Hawthorne, you know, things that I would like pay $60 or $70 for on eBay. Is just, it's all here. And there's like 10 of them and I don't understand it, but it's like a, it's very plentiful. The inexpensive, cool vintage and just craft stuff.
And you know, I got to admit, I, you know, I've been in New York, went to Syracuse at school over there and okay. I never really thought about it, but yeah, there are no Goodwills out there.
I mean, there's like a couple of sad, tragic ones, but you know, after all of this started, I did talk to a friend who says that there is a Goodwill Bins in Jersey. And she went and it was like a whole different experience because it was more about the fashion.
Oh, Jersey.
Oh, yes. And I did work in Jersey for a while. I've worked in a few places in Jersey. But I have a fondness for Jersey. Now that I have some distance, I kind of miss it. Like
now you have the distance.
I'm like, oh, Jersey, I miss you.
Oh, I miss you. So, you know, how did you financially, did you just start this kind of organically, just kind of grassroots it?
Yeah, I mean, I just would just buy stuff. And it was like a hobby and it was kind of like an excuse to buy more fun craft. Cause like, it's like everyone who likes to make things likes to buy things. I mean, that's the, like one of the best parts is like people that go to Michael's and they're like, yes, this is great. But, so I just kind of would like, cause I would go there shopping for stuff for the kids and I would grab stuff for me. So it's still very much kind of like that, except now the shopping is like more part of my work day where I'm like, oh, I haven't been to the Value Village and I'm like, I better go check out the Easter. And, it's interesting, but yeah. And so it's just been like that. And it's in my house. It's just, I had a studio that was kind of my stay at home mom request was that I had a studio. So when we bought the house, like I have a room for me, which is now spilling out into the living room. It's everywhere currently. It's just everywhere. So I'm getting a shed.
Oh, nice.
That's my big excitement. Nice. Not to work in, but to just get everything out of my house into.
I'm looking forward, hopefully this summer, to get a shed.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
The shed is, it's gonna, I'm just picturing these like rows of bins. Like it's just, it sounds so soothing.
I'm actually now picturing the she shed commercials.
Yeah. Right? But I don't want to work out there. It's like once you turn into a she shed, then it's like, it's just, it sounds cold. It sounds very like, oh, how am I going to be warm and like damp? And, like.
So are you just going to primarily for storage?
Yeah, just for storage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, is this your first business?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I tried to start a bunny milkshake. Like the name I started, I'd say around 2009, maybe 2009. And I was doing textiles. So I did a couple of big events like the Renegade, East Coast and West Coast, doing woven textiles because I was, you know, I also weave and trying to make housewares with that. I mean, the hard part about all of this is like your hours. It's like when you go from working at a place where you can bill your hours to not being able to bill your hours and people say, oh, like you figure out your prices by how many hours. And I'm like, that's not how this works at all. Like, no, then it would be like, you know, $6,000 please for this pencil topper. But, yeah, no, it's
so true.
It's so sad, but it's true. Cause it's like, you can't even calculate, especially if you have something like shopping involved. It's like, I don't know how long that, like, it's impossible to calculate.
Point. And your drive time and all, you're taking the miles and the gas and then you start,
Yeah. And just like the sorting of, like, that's part of it is I'd go and get all these supplies and I have to like sort them out into where they need to go so I can put them all together. And that's a whole situation.
Now you mentioned the name, you've used it. Where did bunny milkshake come from?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I've always liked bunnies. So I had bunnies at the time. I've always kind of had bunnies. And then, I think it's one of those things, you know, when I went to school, they talk a lot about branding if you're in industrial design. And so, you know, even if you don't have a product, you usually have a logo and a name. And like, you know, you can just look like you have a business, even though there's nothing behind it, right? They teach you that, like, you know, you need to have this like strong face going forward. So, so that felt very important. So before I had anything, I just sat and brainstormed like what funky little names I could have. But then like it was hard because it was like bunny milkshake. And then so the second half of it is concoctions, which is like a really long word. So I have this really long company name. So when I go to make business cards, it's like just a kind of a mess. It's just so many words. But nothing else sounded right. It's like bunny milkshake ink. Oh, that's boring. You know, now I think maybe I would have stuck with, you know, just bunny milkshake ink.
So the full name is actually bunny milkshake. Concoctions,
yeah, which they are concoctions, so it's appropriate, but it's long.
Yeah,
long one. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm realizing that the shades of entrepreneurship is one, very long.
Yeah.
And two, entrepreneur is actually really hard to spell.
Because I typed it in and I kept switching the E.
Yeah, I get the E and the U mixed up. Yeah.
Which one? I was like, we'll just let the computer decide.
Yeah. Thank God for Google. Thank God. Now, what has been difficult about this business or starting this business?
I think it's time. For me, it's just going to be time because I'm also parenting and that's, I mean, I could fill all my time with the parenting and with the housework and the whatever. So it's like carving away the time and then making it feel important. I think, you know, when things transition from like a hobby to a business, it's like making the time for it and make it valid, you know, because you're kind of like, well, you know, I guess I could, because the first thing that goes out the window is when a kid gets sick. Or like right now, the kids have all these days off for school for whatever reason. And like it's making me nuts. But it's like, that's my schedule. So that's all of a sudden, those are 2 days I can't work this week unless I pay someone or do something. But it feels different than if you go to a job or if you have set hours or something like that. So for me, my hours are complete chaos because I just squeeze in little bits all over, you know, it just, especially during the pandemic, it was like every 20 minutes, I would get 20 minute work bursts. Two kids on computers, you know, then like hook them up to the next class and then go down. Like my glue gun was like always on. If it wasn't, I'd be so frustrated.
That's too funny. And that's, I admit, you know, even with this podcast, as I was mentioning, I work a full-time, you know, job. Right. And so like right now it's a, hey, let's do an interview during the kids' nap time.
Yeah. But then if they decide they're not going to nap that day.
Thank God for mom's home too. So she's helping out. But yeah, it's kind of plug and play.
Well, yeah. I mean, the kid like coughs and I'm like, no, like not today. You can't cough today. Like,
I can't. You can't get sick. No. Now, has there been anything easy about this process?
I mean, for me, it's like the work itself is easy. Like I've always had like a billion ideas. I never run out of ideas. So I can make I feel like I just run out of the energy for it, but I can just make stuff. So for me, I just flow. Like I can just keep making stuff until I pass out. Like just like what's next, what's next, what's next. So I think that's the easy part for me is like just the making of it. Like it seems to fit for whatever reason, this wreath thing, which I've never had wreaths in my life. It just fits. Like I can just, it kind of focuses my energy, like this circle format or something.
Yeah. So why wreath and why recycle? How did the concept kind of formulate?
When I was in school, I mean, I've always been obsessed with upcycling and reuse. And one of the reasons I didn't go into industrial design was because of it was all about mass production. You know, we would go visit a pen factory and I'm like, oh my God, like so many pens, so many toothbrushes. Why are we doing? And they're like, redesign the pen. I'm like, again, like why are we doing this? You know, cause it just creates so much garbage. And so, it stresses me. It's always stressed me out. It's always like been a problem. So, for me, it was important to not create more garbage, like more things people are going to toss. Like my hope is the things I make people will use again and again, you know, they can use it every year. They can do something with it. And then I make them out of things that people use once, like gift ties. And I love Hawaiian Lays, like those cheap ones that people buy and pack at the dollar store.
Yeah.
Like, I use those so much.
Yeah.
But that part was important. And the wreath thing was just random. Like I literally had just picked up some little wreaths at the store at the Goodwill. And brought them home. And I had found this little box. This little box is like my favorite thing now. It was like someone's collection of little tiny bits. It was vintage. It had kind of like fancy cursive. I envision there's like some fancy lady that had this. And inside the box was all these little tiny pins and all these little plastic flowers and all these glittery bits. And you could tell this was like her little craft box. And so I pulled that out and I pulled these wreaths out and I started making wreaths for just fun one day. And that's still my favorite little box to dip into because I'm like, oh, just a little special thing. It's just random. I mean, everything is pretty, it's kind of like it just sort of happened, I think.
What motivates you?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I don't really know. I think just the way my brain is, it's like the kind of dumping of ideas and designs all the time because they're always there. So for me to have an outlet for that and to just, especially like the time frame, I can just keep making one and then the next and then the next. It's soothing, you know, and it's exciting. It's fun to watch people get excited about something that they're going to put in their house. And because some people get really excited and they're like, this is the one. And I'm like, oh, yay. this is great, you know, and that's fun. That's motivating.
Yeah. And, you know, I got to admit, I spent some time on the website looking at your page, looking at some of your products. They're super cool. They're super cute. Thanks. They're super creative. Give the audience at home, kind of describe it verbally, kind of what they're going to get. Cause it is going to be a wreath, but there's more than just wreaths. Cause you mentioned you had Christmas ornaments, which I think now I might've gotten confused is earrings.
Well, those are what people want to put on their ears. So you're not wrong. You're totally not wrong. I use a lot of color. I don't shy away from color. But just unique little things. Like I'm trying to think what I just made one where I found a little yarn llama and I put it on with some kind of fancy yarn things that I've been gathering for probably 2 years. And then, you know, I try to hit every kind of aesthetic, but always a little wackadoodle. There's always some wackadoodle there. Some of them are kind of funny. Sometimes there's a little situation happening on there. But just one of a kind, kind of unique, bright, sparkly things, I think. You know, I can do some darker things. Like Halloween, I try. I did this one with crows and I called it the Moira wreath.
Oh, nice.
You know, obviously Moira. That was had lots of black. So,
how do you market yourself? How do you brand Bunny Milkshake?
Well, I really just talk about the reuse factor and the colors and just kind of that, like it's just kind of fun and good for the planet and hopefully makes you laugh or smile or something, you know?
Yeah. I know you and I were actually before this, we started recording, we're talking about the good old social media. Our love hate relationship. Yes. I don't think folks really at home understand, it's not easy to become social media famous. No. And the amount of work that actually goes on the back end is pretty a mess, right?
It is. It's like there's like a baseline amount. I feel like I'm at the baseline of what I should be doing. You know, like try to post every day. But, you know, for every post, you need to take the photos and you need to fix the photos and you have to, you know,
think of the comments and think of the hashtags.
Yes. I feel like I'm always missing the hashtags. I feel like there's some brilliant hashtags that I just haven't discovered.
Yeah. And so here's a little tip for the folks at home that are going through this plight of, you know, having to try to post something every other day or every day. A few things that I've been doing. One, put all your hashtags on like a Word document so you copy and paste. I did that. Just copy and paste. Okay. So all my hashtags are on a Word doc, copy and paste. Now, what I also did is I actually went on Google and like, hey, what are the most famous hashtags for, you know, what gets the most draw? So, So the hashtags I'm using are actually, you know, ones that are commonly used as well. So that's one. Two, organically go and build relationships, you know, build and like comment on other folks' ideas, like their post. I share a lot of community posts on my Instagram. So if like there's a local event coming up, Gallery Go-Go, anytime, you know, as we post something I tend to post or any of my past guests, how important has networking been for you and kind of getting the business going?
It's definitely important. I mean, and I think it is for any business. I think it's like the most important thing. So it's getting yourself out there. You know, I do these shows. I have a couple coming up like the Night Market and Crafty Wonderland. I finally got into, which took 400 years, but it's like getting yourself in front of people to talk to them about it is, I think, the most important, more than a lot of the social media, because you can't get a lot of the information on the social media. You know, you can kind of get a picture and a little thing, but I think that's the best way, you know. And Ajri, she's great at the gallery.
Oh yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, so she's good at all that stuff. So
yeah,
she's helping me figure some of that out.
Man, shout out to Gallery Go-Go. They're doing some amazing things. The pieces of art that she'd be kind of, and I think too, the community that she's creating, right? That's really cool.
Yeah. And she's so positive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, as a small business owner, what keeps you up at night?
Oh, I don't know. Not too much. Well, the only thing that really stresses me out are deadlines. So, that's really kind of it, because there's less pressure on my business for the money part of it. Like I need to make a certain amount of money, but it's not as high pressure as it would be if I was in New York or somewhere else. So I have room for some failure, which is relaxing, because a lot of people don't, you know. I don't have people that have given me money that I have to pay back or, you know, any of that stuff. So there's that pressure is not on me. Otherwise I think that would drive me crazy. But for me, it's just these kind of production deadlines, like producing how much, because I never know what people are going to buy, and everything I make is different. And then you know, sometimes I have something that does so well at one sale and then just crickets at the next sale. And so you have to figure out what you need to bring. And then I've learned there's like a physical limitation to how much you can make yourself. Like,
oh, yeah.
Which which my brain will keep going, but, you know, eventually you do have to sleep. So
makes sense.
That's hard. I think that's hard.
Has ever been a moment of self-doubt?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Like, what am I doing? You know, sometimes you're like, just put it all in bins and like go have a yard sale. Like, who knows, you know? Yeah, oh, definitely. And one of the things that's funny is I use a lot of items on my wreaths that are very expensive, or they were. So that's kind of hurts a little, because I've done some resale to kind of, that's one thing I've done to kind of keep the money coming in for the business, is like if I go to the bins or something, I'll pick up things I know I can resell on eBay or to consign, you know, like cool vintage stuff.
Right, right.
And I'll resell that, and that helps me fund my business. But so I'll get things that I know, or they'll still have the price tags on it, and I'll be like, this $60 ornament is going on a wreath that costs $68, you know? And it's, I try not to think about it like that. I try to think of every material as equal. Like, it's all equal. It's all just stuff, no matter what, you know, like Lord and Taylor priced it at. It's like, doesn't matter. But sometimes you're tempted to just be like, oh, if I just like nudge this over here, I could just sell it, you know? And, yeah, and it's, there's a line there where I try to figure out what's what.
And for the folks that are buying $60 Christmas ornaments, there are a lot of small businesses out there you can support with, instead of buying a $60 Christmas
ornament. But even the craft supplies alone, like I couldn't do what I was doing if I had to buy new supplies. Like I will put on like 30 flowers and each flower had a price tag of $5 on it. And, you know, I just got it. Someone had donated it to Goodwill and then I bought it by weight, you know?
Yeah.
So that's something that always makes me feel a little nutty, is the volume of cost for someone else to do this. Like if someone's like, I want to make wreaths, it's like they couldn't, if unless they charged like, you know, $600 for a wreath, which, you know, that would be fine, I guess, but hard to sell.
Yeah. So what advice do you have for aspiring entrepreneurs or even thrifters? Cause you know, that's the kind of an area you seem to be in. What kind of advice, you know, would you say, hey, these are the pitfalls to avoid?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't feel like I've had too many pitfalls. I feel like it's been pretty, it's like kind of just been a slow climb. I think for thrifters, it's like, you know, leave some of it at the store, unless you have somewhere to put it, because you can just amass so much, especially in a place like Portland where there's so much that you can get. I know a lot of people that have amassed a great pile of thrift and they don't have anything to do with it. So I think, but you know, it's been pretty good. I haven't had too much, you know, well, I mean, you know, just get sleep, take a day off. That's like the best advice, because I do not take days off, and that makes for exhaustion.
Yeah. Rarely.
Yeah. No, I don't. So, and I'm looking forward. My next day off, I think, is, May 1st.
It was kind of funny. I was thinking about like looking at the head of the calendar before you got here. And I'm like, okay, I got a presentation in Missouri. Then I got to come back, and then I got fly out to Mexico, and I come back, and I got a presentation in Atlanta. Then I come back, and then I got to go to a wedding in Missouri again. And then it's like, but in addition to that, it's work plus podcasting plus writing a newsletter plus writing a blog plus
it's like your brain is going in 400 directions at once. Yep. And even with just my business, it's like even trying to think, because it's not just the making, there's all these other things you have to do that I've learned to try to make time for. Like I try to have everything that I'm going to make for a sale done 3 days before, because I used to work right up till, because then you still have to price everything, you have to pack everything, you have to have bags to give people, you have to have price tags made. Like I make the price tags out of recycled paper, you know. It's like all that little stuff is also, and then you have to advertise on Instagram, and it's a lot. It's a lot of extra stuff when I would just prefer to do the making, really.
What would you say are some of the little things that surprised you that kind of arose? You're like, oh, didn't think about that.
I think it's the time stuff and just the, how much it takes other than making things. And, you know, and the advice they always gave you at school is like, hire someone to do the things that you aren't good at, or you don't have the time to do. Like free up your good time. Like I'm good at the making. That's the best thing I'm good at. So I should, in theory, have people doing this other stuff for me. But when you're a small business, you can't afford that. Yep. So, I mean, that's the dream. In the end.
That's the goal, right? The scalability to get to that point.
Yeah, you gotta like find the, they say find your people and do that. So
Speaking of finding people, how can the listeners find you? Bunny Milkshake, how can they find your Instagram? Where are you at?
Okay, so I'm on most of the things. I'm on Instagram. Bunny Milkshake Concoctions. It's underscore concoctions. Bunny Milkshake was taken already.
Oh, those savages.
I dragged my feet so long because I'm not a tech-savvy human. It's not my thing. So I dragged and dragged, and then finally it was gone when I wanted it, and I'm still grumbly at her, but that's fine. Because you can see, I'm like, oh, you have a bunny named Milkshake. Like, oh, I mean, it fits. It's fine.
Son of a.
But then I have a website, bunnymilkshake.com. And then I'm on Facebook, too. I have a page there. I don't do too much with the Facebook page. Mostly the stuff that pops up there just comes right from Instagram.
Yeah.
So I have a couple people that only look there, but mostly it's Instagram and my website.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. Although, statistically speaking, ROI is Facebook.
Yeah.
That's where the return on investment really is.
Really?
Yeah, like big time. Like, we're talking like, I think it's like 89% return on value for advertisement on Facebook.
I've never
like
advertised
that.
On Facebook.
I haven't either. I mean, I just do like, I'll do all my, you know, quotes or so. I haven't done like a big push though. But the ROI on Facebook it's pretty high.
Because I should try that one.
I think one of my previous episodes talked about Facebook algorithms and how they kind of switched over from focusing on just the spam from, you know, news and stuff, right? Spamming to now having a lot of the stuff that you see is usually shared content from friends and families.
Yeah.
The reason they did that is because people are 16 times more likely to open up a link if it's shared by a friend or family than if it's shared by the brand.
Right.
So Zuck's basically like, oh, I see people are more interactive with friend and family sharing. And so he's kind of prioritized those in the algorithm. So folks that are listening, please feel free to share this, the Bunny Milkshake website or the Shades of E website. So we can, you know, the organic, organic growth.
Right. The organic. And I'll be at some sales too coming up. So I've got,
where are you going to be at?
I'm going to be at the night market. That's next weekend.
Yes. I'll be there. I'm going to see you.
Okay. Good.
Yep. We'll be there.
Nice. And then on the weekend after is Crafty Wonderland.
Are you going to be there Friday or Saturday or both days?
It's both days.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of all or nothing deal.
Oh, perfect. So yeah, I'm not sure what day I'm thinking Saturday.
Saturday is good. You got to get tickets now. That's their deal. You have to buy a time slotted ticket, the COVID thing.
Oh shit. Well, good thing I talked to you.
Yes. They're like $2 or something, but they're trying to limit the amount of people.
Makes sense.
So
that's good.
Yeah. So get a ticket and come. I think the Friday night's like I think it's more money. It's like the preview night.
Okay.
So it's, you know, you get a drink, it costs like probably $20 to get in. You get a free drink and you get access to all first dibs. People get very into first dibs at these.
Oh yeah.
I think is interesting.
I was just going to support the community.
Yeah.
To drink.
So you don't need first. Well, you can drink. You can drink both days, I think.
There you go.
I think maybe. Yeah.
Winner. Perfect. Well, I'll see you here later on this week for the folks at home. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. Please subscribe. Please check out the new website, theshadesofe.com. I built it myself. Please tell me how you like it. Other than that, thank you and have a great night.
Thank you for tuning in to the Shades of Entrepreneurship. For more information, please follow the Shades of E on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or visit theshadesofe.com.